Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast. I am Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello, I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. Today, I am talking about a completely unuseful sentence. I don't know. But first, let's do some Theater Folk news. Okay, so this podcast is coming out May 1st. Today, the day that I am speaking to you, is not May 1st. Did I tell you I am going away? So I am, and frankly, gosh darn it, it's sort of difficult to accumulate news for the future. First world problems. I can't do my podcast properly because I'm going on vacation. So what I wanted to do was I'm going to tell you about some of the new plays that I've got bubbling in the Theater Folk Test Kitchen. It is a lovely kitchen. It has a gas stove. So I am working with the school this month to develop a play called Monster Problems that they're going to perform for their feeder schools. And I am so happy when I can put another middle school out there into the world that has nothing to do with fairy tales. Although I have to say that this one does have a zombie, Medusa, and an Irish vampire who is a little boy crazy and files her nails. Next, I am workshopping a vignette play, a new vignette play called Neat Teen, and that is N-E-E-T-T-E-E-N, which is all about, which makes sense, teen life backwards and forwards and inside out. I'm very much attached to this title. I think it's rather swell. So it'll be interesting to see if other people think it's rather swell. Sometimes they don't, you know. You never know. You have to... It's very difficult to, you get into a trap if you start to go, oh, I'm doing this because it'll be popular. I'm doing this because it'll sell well. I'm doing this because it's going to do X, Y, and Z. And really the only thing you can do is I'm putting this out there because I'm proud of it. I'm putting this out there because I like it. I'm putting it out there because I can see that there's a need and this is how I am trying to fill that need with something that I like and that I'm proud of. It's the only way you can do it, because if you start to guess or you start to, you know, try and tell the future about what's going to happen with the play, well, it just won't happen. And then you'll get sad and lonely and live with cats. So I'm going to not do that. I'm going to not do that. Excellent English. All right. The really cool thing for me about Neat Teen is that it really, really worked to extend my comfort zone in terms of writing within a different format. Scenes with movement, absurd scenes without any, dialogue at all, monologue, poetry, choral work. So I can't wait to see how that comes to life, right? How do the schools respond to working in these formats, and do they work on stage the same way that I imagine that they work in my head, which is not always the case. And that's why getting a script on its feet is so vital. And then when I get back from my vacation, BFV, be working on a play called The Gift, which is inspired by the short story, The Gift of the Magi. This is a new holiday full length, which isn't necessarily, you know, specifically Christmas related, but is very much in the theme of the spirit of giving, you know, the spirit of the holidays. And it is so close to being done. I can smell it. I can smell this play being so close, so ready. So keep your fingers crossed on that one, and you better cross your toes too, you know, if you would, please. Lastly, where, oh, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every Wednesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on the Stitcher app, and you can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search on the word Theater Folk. Episode 39. I don't know. Well, I do know that it's episode 39. And I also know how easy it is to say those three words. I don't know. Sometimes we say it when we do know the answer. We exactly know the answer to whatever question we're being asked, and we just don't want to deal with it. We don't want to make it known that we know. And sometimes it's so much easier to say, I don't know. Sometimes our brain can't articulate an answer in the moment, so we just go to that catch-all sentence, I don't know. And sometimes, of course, a sentence is just that, a sentence. And we say, I don't know, because, well, we don't know. So there is a festival that I have adjudicated for a couple of times, and this festival includes a private feedback session. So for each show, each production, they perform, and then after their performance, they congregate together, they come into a room, and they sit with the adjudicator and chat about the production, about what they did and what the adjudicator saw. And it depends on the adjudicator as to the kind of chat that takes place. Some adjudicators lecture, some make it inclusive. These chats can be tremendously nerve-wracking for the students involved. You know, what is the adjudicator going to say behind closed doors? Are they going to be mean? Are they going to say anything constructive? Will they laugh? Will they, you know, say we're horrible? You know, all those things sort of flash through your mind. So adjudicators, by and large, in general, are human. So there are many different kinds of adjudicators who follow many different kinds of methods. And my personal method is to ask a lot of questions. I find that's where you get to the heart of what a production intended and whether or not their presentation matched their intention. And that's just it's an interesting inside look. I mean, as an adjudicator, you are adjudicating what you see on stage. But I think it's always good to be in the know. You know, asking questions is where I find out if a production had to replace their cast a few weeks before. And how was that handled on stage? Or if they were working without a staff advisor, you know, that plays a part. Or if a student had to step in and stage manage at the last minute. Asking questions is where I find out how much background work actors have put into their characters. And if there was a vision behind the costumes, for example, that were used. So if you are involved with any competition that also involves that fun little thing, the private feedback session, here is the biggest tip I can give you. Aside from the tip of don't treat your adjudicator as the enemy. I know it's tense. I know everybody is really, really tense and they want the adjudicator to tell them that they loved everything they saw. And it's so heartbreaking and demoralizing when that doesn't happen. But they really are. It's one person with one opinion. And so to get all tense about whether one person with one opinion likes your work just seems so exhausting. All you can do is present your best work and be happy with your work, as opposed to getting all bunched up about whether or not you're going to win an award or you know, come out on top. You don't have any control over that. The ranking, the award, the score is out of your hands. Putting on a work that you're proud of, that you can control. Okay? Okay, so another tip. Have an answer for everything. Have a reason for everything that you do, everything that is put on stage, every aspect of your production. The answer to how something came to be on stage, in your character, in a production, should never be, I don't know. To have something on stage by accident or just because, well, it shows as a lack of care in your presentation. And that judgment may be totally false. Maybe you care a lot. Maybe you're just working with what you have and you have very little. You know, to me as an adjudicator, that's not a problem. never going to penalize a production with working with what they have, working within their means, doing their best at what they can do. But saying that presents a much different situation to me as an adjudicator than someone saying, well, I don't know. I don't know why the costumes are this way. I don't know why there was that lightning cube. You know what I mean? And the adjudicator, if they're doing their job correctly, isn't looking for the supreme being, there is only one answer, because that's not what theater is. There is no such thing as one answer. Certainly, there are types of plays where the direction that a play goes, based on the intention of the playwright, is going to be narrower than other plays. But, you know, the adjudicator is looking for your answer, your choice, where you're coming from. I personally love hearing where student actors and student directors have put their efforts beyond learning the lines and just moving around the stage. What extra did they put in? And a lot of times, when I'm watching a production and I'll see something and I'll see it on something on stage and something's not quite right, something doesn't jive, and I'll want to know why. I want to question. I want to know what was the intention behind that moment, or, you know, what was going on stage, you know, give me some feedback. And even though it might not work for me on a personal taste level, the answer given in the adjudication could be so wonderful, so well thought out, that I have to, you know, I have to give kudos. I cannot help but be overjoyed by it. I love that moment. I love when someone stands up and defends their choice. I love hearing about a well thought out choice, regardless of what I, you know, whether I think they went in a personal taste direction. Who cares about that? This is not about personal taste. This is about, you know, what a production does and brings to the stage. And here's a great example. So I saw a show where the world of the play was very futuristic. People were brainwashed, robotic. Everybody was dressed identically in shirts that were buttoned right up to the neck, and everybody was wearing regulated colors. Everybody marched. You know, it was a very set out world. It was a very specific world. And there was so much attention paid to the details of this world that when something didn't fit, something didn't jive, it really jumped out at me. You know, that's kind of my job, right? I have to look for that stuff when I adjudicate. I call myself, it's Queen Picky McPickerson. So to that end, when I'm watching the show, I really noticed that the risers that the show was using for all their action, the risers were pretty badly scuffed. They looked like risers that had been used a lot over the years, over and over, and it looked like they hadn't been properly prepared for the show. To me, they seemed out of place in a world where everything is neat, where everything is robotic, everything is perfect and pristine. In my head, I thought, well, those risers should have been perfect and pristine to match the world. And so I brought up the issue with the risers in the private adjudication. And the director, who was a student, had a beautiful explanation. She was right on it, and she went on and on about how the scuffs were there on purpose because they were representative of how the perfect nature of this particular world was showing its cracks. Soon it was all going to come falling apart. It was there as a juxtaposition to the costumes and the marching and the way that the characters acted. That is a great answer. Now, is it a true answer? Did they really discuss this in rehearsal? And did she really stand up and say, no, we are not going to paint the risers because it's a representation of blah, 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 right? Well, who knows? And who cares? That's not my job to be cynical about the answers I'm given. My job is to accept the answers that I'm giving. And it fit with the world of the play. It was a good answer because that's pretty much basically exactly what did happen. We have this perfect world where the cracks started to show. And further to that, her answer to the question was most definitely not, I don't know. And beyond the world of adjudication, you know, when you're just sitting there watching a play, when I'm just sitting there watching a play, it's really not that difficult to tell when I'm watching a show where actors don't know all the details of their character, because they come across as actors playing a part instead of characters living in a world. They're just saying their lines and moving about the stage. And to me, the way to make theater come alive is to have alive three-dimensional characters on stage, interacting, communicating with an audience. That's how an audience isn't connecting to the actor. The audience is connecting to the character. So they have to be alive. And when an actor says, "I don't know," about something to do with their character, then they're not fully doing their job. And personally, I don't care if you're in a high school show, a college show, a community theater, or professional. You're on that stage, you accepted a part, so you should do your job. You know? You have to fully play that character. You have to engage with the script. You have to engage with the character and making it your own. And this has nothing to do with changing the script. I am sure that you know how much I despise the notion of changing a script because you think you can't work with it or you think you know something better. But it's about working with the script, delving into a script, mining it, wringing out every last element from word choice to pauses to relationships to the name of your character. You know, we spend a little time thinking about what characters are called. Spend a little time. Do a little research. Is there a definition that you can look up? Is there a cultural history that you could look up? If someone asks you what your character's name means, you should have an answer. And you shouldn't say, "I don't know." Why don't you know? The more you know, the more you have to work with, the more colors and shades you have to play with, the more fun the character becomes. When I was acting, character development and script analysis was always my favorite part. I loved learning the little details, so much so, too much so, I think. I was more into the analysis of it than the performance of it, but that's why I'm not acting. So when you're in a show, think about what you don't know about your character. Instead of saying, "Oh, well, the playwright didn't give it to me. Oh, my character doesn't have a name, so I don't need to come up with one." Or, "Well, the director isn't providing me with the information. I guess I don't have to worry about it." No way. Do the work yourself. Look at what you've been given and fill in the blanks that give you more to work with, but fit with the world of the play. Create a character profile. My favorite character development exercise is to describe the bedroom of your character using the five senses. You know, the bedroom is more often than not such a place of truth for a person. You know, think about how you keep your bedroom. It's a place where people sometimes hide themselves or things. It's where their pain shows. It's where they bring to life their inner self. Or maybe, you know, they're so trapped inside that the room is just as bare and sparse, and it just, you know, it shows this horribleness. You know, there's truth in the bedroom. That's what I think. And using the five senses just illuminates and visualizes the character in such a vivid way. So really, have I said this enough? Put in the time. Do character development work. What are you? You know, are you a robot? No. Are you just going to stand there on stage and say some lines? Don't you want to have an effect? A direct effect on the way an audience responds to your work? Don't you want to give an audience a theatrical, transformative experience? Don't you want the audience to remember you long after they leave the darkness of the theater and they go back to their real world? That is what we all want. The love and adoration of an audience long past the time they see you on that stage. And if your response to all this is, "Well, Lindsay, I don't really care. I don't care one way or the other." Well, then what are you doing? What are you doing on the stage? What are you there for? Go do something else. Okay. I know, that was a little, I was a little angry. I don't know is the answer that just, it just frustrates me. And I'm no saint. I've said it. I said it lots of times. But this is a situation, you know, on the stage that is, it is a, you were trying to bring realism to an artificial moment. And that means that there are answers at your fingertips. And the answer quite often is the one that you come up with. And the answer is within your control. And when that outcome could be so wonderful, if you put in the time, well, it just puts a little bee in my bonnet. And I have a lovely bonnet. Trust me. And that is where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.